Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, who would you say has had the biggest fail in the last couple of weeks?
I wish I had looked at any news other than just the car crash of Liz Truss, because there'd be a funny thing here, wouldn't there? Oh, you know who has had the biggest fail? Glasgow. Obviously, I'm talking about the city of Glasgow that was pipped at the post, was the favourite to be the host of the Eurovision Song Contest 2023. Yes, I'm going there, listener. Have you met me before? Of course I'll take any chance to talk about Eurovision that I can. Yeah, Glasgow was the favourite for such a long time, and then Liverpool beat them, which, more than anything, is going to create an inevitability of us having a rendition of Imagine by probably all of the previous UK winners and the Ukrainian winners, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that song is...
done to death.
Dubious, done to death, was arguably ruined even further by the celebrity rendition early in the COVID pandemic.
Oh my God, Gal Gadot, and that was... no, that elevated it. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about.
Actually, is not very strongly connected to Liverpool. I'm aware of where John Lennon was from, but It's not a very Liverpool Beatles song, I would argue.
What do you want them to do? Eleanor Rigby?
Penny Lane, Strawberry Fields.
What's that got to do with war?
I mean, with war?
Yeah. The reason it's in the UK is because of the Ukrainian war.
I mean, yes, that is true, although I would actually say that the reason the Ukrainians are fighting is in direct contravention of the spirit of that song, which argues for there being no countries, which is very much not on the Ukrainian agenda, I would say. So,
In fact, if anything, they want more countries. Do they?
Well, maybe they want Russia. I mean, maybe they don't want Russia, but they want Ukraine to be independent, I suppose.
They want at least two countries, which is more than John Lennon wanted.
Okay. I'm glad we've cleared this up and provided an excellent reason for why Eurovision in Liverpool should not start with a rendition of Imagine. I wasn't actually queuing you up to talk about Eurovision, Jazza, because, as you well know, we are going to be discussing that in our bonus segment.
We've got to plug the bonus segment.
We do have to. I was actually queuing you up to attack me for having failed to edit the last podcast we recorded.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yes.
Because Liz Truss, I mean, once again, has overshadowed you.
I mean, throughout my life, I would say Liz Truss has been overshadowing me in so many ways.
There are many people who have commented that maybe she's thick. Maybe she's thick. But you know what? I don't think many thick people have, like, become prime minister. And actually, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's quite... I mean, if I were in her position, I'd have been like, guys, you know what? I'll step down. It's fine. We can all agree we made a mistake. But she keeps on going. And you know what? She has actually outperformed you, because you didn't keep going in the face of adversity, did you? You left that episode unedited.
That was very nicely dovetailed. You should be pleased with that. But we recorded an episode, and for various reasons, I did not get around to editing it. And then the government—it's
fine. We forgive him.
The government crashed the economy and somewhat nullified or overshadowed what we've been saying on the podcast. That's why it's been so long. I mean, we were worried at one stage that we might fail to record a podcast within the boundaries of Liz Truss's premiership.
That would have been so iconic. I'd have loved that. Yeah, and actually, the part of me wanted us to hold out for the rest of Liz Truss's premiership, however long it be, just to say that we'd done that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a strong play from us. Quite on brand as well. Lots of reasons to do it. But I fear that she may last beyond Christmas, Jazza. And I'm sure at least one or two of our listeners would be very sad not to hear any contributions from us until then.
Yeah, we did get a couple of messages, actually. And thank you. Sorry for the delay, everybody. But we're back now. Jimmy, what are we going to talk about? Why are we here? What is this thing we're doing? Why have I got a microphone?
So, as Jazza indicated, it's been a tricky period for Liz Truss as the new Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. There's been lots of just mishaps in her, you know, what should be the honeymoon of her, you know, leadership of the country. We've already alluded to like the mini budget that managed to cause turmoil in the financial markets. There's been a U-turn on removing the 45p rate of tax, which is the top band of tax, income tax in the UK. At the same time, it's all been great news for Labour. Labour at the moment is it roughly 30 percentage points up on the Tories? I've got the New Statesman's Britain Predicts model says if there were a general election imminently, Labour would end up with 465 MPs,
which is a lot.
That's a lot of MPs. There's 650 MPs in total in the House of Commons. So I think rather than trying to artificially break this down into three segments, as we normally would do, we're just going to be talking in general about the impact of the first month or so of Liz Truss's premiership.
And yeah, I think we do want to touch on Labour's, like the party conference season, because it has been quite pivotal,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And that astronomical rise from Labour, if they hadn't presented such a united front at their conference, then that rise maybe wouldn't have been nearly as strong. But yeah, Christ, there's been an awful lot happening. So let's see if we can remember it all.
Okay.
Great.
So now we're going to play some music. We're going to plug the Patreon account again after Jazz's, you know, 3 minutes of talking about Eurovision at the start.
That is what we're going to be doing as the bonus episode
this
week.
Yes,
but I do promise it will be minimal between now and May next year.
How firm a promise is that? What do we say?
My fingers may be crossed.
Okay. But yes, let's do all those things. Get on with the main part of the show.
Lovely.
If you're a fan of The Right Dishonourable and wish to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable and pledge as little as $1 per episode to keep us going. Mostly this will give you access to a bonus segment after every main release, but you'll also be able to submit topic suggestions for us to cover, and will probably feel commercially obliged to fulfil your request. You also get your name read out during this segment. So thanks to our current patrons, Eterna Elf, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Jer Carney, Ilona Domkina, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Nick Webb, Seb Kales, Tahar Khan, and Theo. Jazzy, do you think anyone predicted it would go quite so badly for Liz Truss so early on in her premiership?
Well, I didn't think that she was going to be very good. I want to put that out there. Was I a pioneer? Perhaps you could say so. not many prime ministers have come into power, then killed a monarch 2 years later. Which is...
Oh, you said two days later rather than 2 years.
Sorry, yes, two days. 2 days later. There's not many prime ministers who have then subsequently, the following week after mourning has finished, then crashed the economy to the point where there's nearly parity between the pound and the dollar for the first time in history, and then become more unpopular than her predecessor, despite the fact that he was basically having bunga bunga parties all the way through lockdown.
I think bunga bunga parties...
That's Silvio Berlusconi thing.
Yeah, I think that makes them sound more interesting than they actually were. I mean, Silvio Berlusconi, they were like, you know, scantily clad women. And in Boris Johnson's case, it was more like Tesco meal deals on the table and very cheap wine.
I was like some cheddar cheese and some pineapple on a stick.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
That's my idea of a bunga bunga, Jimmy.
Well, your horizons have really narrowed since the lockdown
started.
They
really have. Well, it's a mixture of lockdown in my 30s, I think.
I mean, Silvio Berlusconi was pretty old. I mean, he's 70 now. I think he was probably in his 50s when he was having his bunga bunga parties.
And you know what? Good for him. Why does everybody hate on him so much? she's had a pretty remarkable first month. She's at like she's minus 59 or something like that, in terms of her popularity, which is wild, because this is meant to be her honeymoon period. It's just mind-blowing. Keir Starmer is also still negative, though, but he is rising ever since their Boris Johnson left office, so that's good for him. But also, somehow, she hasn't, like, spontaneously burst into tears at some point in public, which is what I would be doing if this were the opening month of my work.
I mean,
there's also like the embarrassing U-turn that they had to do, where one of the announcements that they had for the mini budget that wasn't a budget, don't call it a budget, stop calling it a budget, where they said that they were going to scrap the 45% tax rate on top earners, and they've completely U-turned on that after all the way through Conservative Party conference, all of her backbench MPs, but also cabinet colleagues, were going against the government's line and saying, well, maybe we should rise it with inflation, where Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng were saying that they wanted to increase benefits in line with wages, which is a cheaper way of doing it, and not as good. It's a remarkable collapse of any kind of authority that she could have hoped to have had.
I mean, on the point about her resilience, I think that if you kind of read the sort of behind the scenes coverage of Theresa May's premiership, I think there was a story on the 2017 election, when Theresa May saw the exit poll, she started crying, and I think the front that Theresa May presented, you know. Admittedly, everyone did kind of end up feeling sorry for her because she was losing so many battles in Parliament and she seemed so out of control. But she put on a stronger front in public than she was behind the scenes. So although there is this, I suppose, perception that, Liz Truss is a bit of a robot in public, probably because of her, you know, delivery in terms of speeches and general behaviour. You know, I'm sure she is feeling kind of terrible about how all of this is going. I think
Can you imagine? Like, still in... If this were a normal job, she'd be in her... what's it called? Like a probation period?
Yeah.
And they'd be able to sack her. Whereas for some reason, the most important job in the country, there's no probation period. And people were talking about maybe... Can we put Boris Johnson back in charge?
I mean, I think the whole... So there was this number going around that alleged that 20 letters of no confidence had been given in to Graham Brady, the head of the 1922 committee, which...
Oh my God, how many do they need?
50-something. Now it's like 15% of Tory MPs. I think it was like 56, possibly, under Boris Johnson. And I guess they've got roughly the same number of MPs now, so that would make sense. I don't think I've seen that figure stood up in a serious way, and I think there's also a slight sense in which it's now kind of a legitimate way of voicing your opposition to something that the government has done, to just like phone up a friendly journalist and say, oh, by the way, I've put in my letter to Graham Brady. I know a couple of other people who are thinking about doing it or who have done it, and then the journalist can just go on Twitter and say, hearing that letters have gone into Graham Brady. And I think that's probably just going to be a feature of Tory politics until they change, you know, the mechanism by which they replace a leader, just because the taboo around that has been broken over the last couple of years. But, you know, all that said, it is obviously an exceedingly dysfunctional party at the moment, and the amount of even government ministers, let alone Tory MPs, contradicting one another and disparaging one another's ideas and policies. I mean, you don't want to use the word unprecedented cheaply, but I can't remember anything like it since we started this podcast however many years ago. It just seems crazy.
She just seems to have absolutely no authority whatsoever. So she ended up winning the final runoff at the beginning of September with Rishi Sunak by winning only 57% of the vote, which was less than people were expecting her to. And she also only got a third, barely a third, not even a third, of her Conservative parliamentary party colleagues to back her. She then, when she won with the ballot of the Tory party members, she's then ended up basically not giving any jobs to people who could be considered kind of like team of rivalsy to her. So there's nobody who would disagree with her. There were a couple of people who were in the leadership race and were kicked out before the runoff with Sunak, but nobody who backed Sunak is in her immediate government apart from one or two people, I think.
Yeah. The team of rivals theory of like cabinet appointments is that you pick different figureheads from different factions of your party.
It avoids infighting when you're actually governing.
Yeah, so it's a party.
It's an Abraham Lincoln thing, right?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Barack Obama did it.
Yes, but I think it was also true under Boris Johnson that he didn't pick that many people who were not loose, you know, at least loosely aligned with him. I don't think, and you know, that was an explanation given for why Nadine Dorries and Jacob Rees-Mogg were actually appointed. I mean, I think actually Jacob Rees-Mogg was a pretty staunch defender of Boris Johnson till the end. I think he was certainly not.
I think he still is, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's actually still in government as the business secretary, so he may be the exception to that rule. But yeah, it just I suppose that is part of the reason why the you know, the party is busy fighting with one another, is that it's had so many open leadership elections where sitting MPs have torn chunks out of one another, that I suppose it would just make you look foolish if you criticised a candidate for leader and then actually agreed to go into government with them. So there may be reputational reasons.
But it was such a divisive leadership election, especially the final two between Truss and Sunak, and they really did have very different plans for their approaches to how to run the economy. And Liz Truss, to be fair, has dove straight in and done exactly what she said. She's going to cut taxes and borrow more. And that was the plan that they put out in the mini budget that Kwasi Kwarteng, her new
Chancellor.
Thank you. her Chancellor. The guy who does the monies. People were calling it like developing world economics, like a Latin American dictatorship economics side of things, of just slashing everything and borrowing as much as you can to decrease regulation. And Sunak wanted to have a more of a balanced approach to this and not cut taxes. Those are two approaches that feel like they belong in two different parties. There was 38% of the MPs backed Sunak and 31% of the MPs backed Liz. And that fissure has kind of like has followed through to her being in government, where actually the majority of the people who she is going to have to rely on in order to pass any of her policies, she has none of their support. So good luck passing fucking anything.
I mean, without getting fully into the weeds of our favourite topic, proportional representation, it does somewhat give lie to the old school idea that having a strong majority means that you have a strong, decisive government that can exert its will in terms of mm-hmm. legislation and so on. Because as you say, on paper, Liz Truss has a majority of 80-odd MPs in the House of Commons, but in practice, because so many people opposed her becoming leader and are severe critics of her, in real terms, that majority is much lower and may not even be a real majority.
Well, don't you think that this is a phenomenon that she is struggling with because she is taking over mid election cycle? So she's inherited Boris Johnson's parliamentary party, who were broadly they signed up to and ran on a shared Conservative manifesto, and Liz Truss has diverted so extremely from the manifesto that was in 2019. And to be fair, the world is very different. Like, we've had pandemics That's the main thing, right?
Energy crisis as well, I suppose.
Recently. The energy crisis, war in Europe. Yeah.
There's been a couple of things.
Eurovision in the UK. So much has happened.
that's about to happen, Jazza. So don't get ahead of yourself.
Sorry.
I mean, this is an argument that has been echoed around by various people in British politics, and I think there's a lot to it. The fact that she's, you know, intent on pursuing this radical free market Institute of Economics agenda in terms of cutting taxes, reducing the size of the state. And I think it's fair to say there's no indication that's what people had in mind when they voted for Boris Johnson's Tory party in December 2019. Mm-hmm. There was an amusing variation of this argument made by Nadine Doris, who has been pretty rude about Liz Truss and the current government. But,
which is weird because Nadine Doris backed Liz.
I mean, actually, she was given the opportunity to continue her position as culture secretary, which was the position that she fulfilled under Boris Johnson.
And she thought, you know what, I've done enough damage now. I'll just let it go.
Well, she's criticised Liz Truss for abandoning some of Boris Johnson's policies, which include privatising Channel 4 and reviewing the BBC's licence fee. And then she went on to say, that was our mandate, our deal with the voters. And maybe I'm misunderstanding her slightly, but I don't think that people voted in Boris Johnson in 2019 so that Channel 4 could be privatised. I don't think that was on anyone's agenda, really.
Yeah, I seem to remember it mainly being a get Brexit done and keep Jeremy Corbyn out of power.
Yeah.
Vibes.
Mm. I think arguably the trouble with manifestos, really, is that you often have a long list of very specific policy ideas, and essentially voters are voting on vibes. They like look at somebody's the cut of the various candidates'
gyms. I just really like the Conservative vibes. You know?
I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Like,
I can't. Yeah. That's the depressing thing.
People just like it's kind of like, I mean, this is why having sort of very basic, simplistic communication, a la Tony Blair in 1997, it is very important. Just have a simple, repetitive message or series of messages that you can get through, like get Brexit done, you know. Mm-hmm. And then people will be like, well, you know, generally, this seems to be my guy or gal. You know, this mm-hmm. seems to be the person that I'll vote for. It's not like everyone's looking through the manifestos. It's like, oh, yeah, I like that very specific policy in that tiny area of government spending. That's not really how it works. Mm-hmm. But I think also in the case of Liz Truss, I think a lot of the backlash is actually, a lot of it's about tone. And I find it tedious talking about optics in politics or, you know, just the look of the thing. But heading into a serious recession where people are going to be struggling to feed themselves if they're not earning very much, cutting the top rate of tax and removing the cap on bankers' bonuses, you know, whether or not you think that's sensible in terms of raising more tax revenue, then, you know, there are arguments about that you can reduce some taxes and actually collect more revenue because you increase the amount of activity economically. You know, whatever you think about that, it's just politically crazy to be doing that sort of thing.
Well, I spoke in the lost episode that I thought that their tactic may be for them to have this huge decrease in regulation, which often creates a big boom in the economy, maybe avoiding or shortening the length of a recession, and then them hoping that with that boom and being able to see the economy is growing, that they would use that as an opportunity to call a general election and then get their own mandate to be able to have whatever kind of like agenda that they wanted.
I think I also said in the lost episode that is the only plausible explanation for their behavior at this mm-hmm. point. Because
well, also it's possible that they're zealots.
Well, this is the other kind of idea that's been aired an awful lot, often by somewhat conspiracy-minded people who talk about dark money in politics all the time, without naming names. That basically Liz Truss was groomed. Some people have actually used that word, by the Institute of Economic Affairs, which is this neoliberal think tank, one among several notable ones, the other big one being the Adam Smith Institute.
Mm-hmm. Which are right-leaning kind of like policy thinky people.
Well, I mean, they are very right-leaning economically in terms of sorts of social issues like, you know, gay marriage and stuff. Mm-hmm. If to the extent that they have an opinion on that, generally they're quite liberal. I mean, they're actually, in broad policy terms, they're not a million miles away from The Economist in terms of their, mm-hmm. their broad outlook. Or The Economist has been exceedingly critical of Liz Truss so far. There's questions over how exactly they're funded. That's a big criticism by campaigners, and that's where the dark money thing comes in. Dark money being, you know, sources of funding that are difficult to ascertain the origin mm-hmm. of. But they've definitely been funded in part by like the cigarette industry, for instance. So I suppose the argument is that, you know, sinister business figures are trying to, you know, call for deregulation so they can make more money, you know, kind of like the...
Do you think it might be that the people who would be doing fracking might be doing
that? Well, yeah, that would be the current
because that was,
argument.
That was one of the initial things that they said. We think we're just going to let everybody frack forever. Earthquakes, who cares? Just a little tremor. Wear a hat.
I mean, the thing is, there are lots of people... I mean, I think most of the people who write for these think tanks do genuinely believe this stuff. You know, they may be paid to be writing these papers and blogs
and
appearing
Jimmy,
on media and so on.
As you have represented many times over the years, people can believe things and be wrong.
That's true. I'm just saying that, you know, these are still arguments that some people in politics believe, and I still think you have to deal with the arguments and not resort to saying, oh, you're only saying that because you're a shill for big oil, which... Mm-hmm. I think just a lot of these people are entirely sincere in the arguments they make is all I would say.
I think it's possible for both of those things to be correct. You can be a shill for big oil and also believe that these things are really going to help the economy. The immediate fallout of Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng announcing these tax cutting policies, though, was for the pound to tank, for there to be huge fears around the security of pension funds, which resulted in the Bank of England buying a load of gilts of government bonds.
Had you heard of gilts before this?
I had heard of gilts. I remember 2008. So I've heard the word before. That's about it. But basically, from what I understand, the pension funds were going to run out of like cash that they would need to be able to continue without kind of like collapsing. And at one point there were several pension funds that were like hours away from collapsing, which is why the Bank of England, which is an independent entity and should stay independent, and they support the just kept on going on about the independence of the Bank of England, like we know. But they, that's why they decided to step in and buy government bonds, so that our society didn't collapse.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely au fait with the details there, but yeah, that's, broadly that is
I've watched a few TLDR videos.
I've watched a few videos and I've heard all the terms.
Yeah.
Understand it.
Let me just throw some of those into a sentence and hope that it works.
But yeah, I mean, that's we've talked previously about the Tories seemingly becoming less and less interested in the basic financial interests of their own voter base, and attacking pension funds is bold, I would say.
And seeing mortgage rates increase as well. Anybody who is out of their fixed term is going to be quite worried about the quite severe increase in interest rates in the UK that are going to be set by the Bank of England in order to try and curb inflation. I mean, it is all of the things that the people who vote Conservative care about. It's all of the people who have assets, who have those mortgages to pay, who rely on their pensions. Although pensions are still protected by the triple lock, so they will at least go up in line with inflation. And it's obvious that should happen for pensions and no other form of welfare.
Is the pensions triple lock?
pensions is triple lock. Yeah.
But does that refer to the state pension rather than private pensions people may have?
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the pension funds that were struggling in the last couple of weeks will have been private pensions, and therefore
yes.
They are subject to protections, but I'm not sure the same ones. I mean, at the end of the day, if a pension fund collapses, at bare minimum, that's probably going to cost the government a bunch of money to actually, somewhat compensate the people who were relying on that pension to survive in old age.
I feel like Liz Truss would be the person who would just stand back and watch it all burn and be like, it's market forces.
In a sense, it is market forces. That's the thing. If you're somebody that wants a small state, it's still exceedingly irresponsible to start knocking out all of the, government infrastructure that supports existing, financial things like, pensions and so on. Do you buy this line at all that's being pushed by a lot of Tory sympathising commentators, that actually there were no real serious problems with these measures? It was really just a matter of communication.
Well, that's what she said when she went on Laura Kunzberg, like, the week after, right? And it was just before Conservative Party conference kicked off. And she did that weird interview with Laura Kunzberg where Michael Gove was sitting literally about 5 feet away from her, and then gave, like, scathing analysis saying that she was a really shit prime minister, essentially. Wild scenes on the Laura Kunzberg show. I love when she stirs the pot. I think she's a great broadcaster. The line that she said was, oh yeah, we should have communicated what we were planning to do beforehand. And I'm like, no, that wasn't the problem. The problem was the thing that you did, and then the markets reacted. Like, it wasn't like, oh, what a surprise, let's run on the pound.
I mean, is there any... Maybe if they'd staggered the announcements, it wouldn't have been quite so extreme. Maybe it was the volume of announcements in quick succession.
I think there's that. I think there is also... I mean, in terms of party management, within the party, it wasn't something that was run by cabinet, apparently. Mm. Liz Truss also, ever the appalling communicator, I think unintentionally threw Kwasi Kwarteng under the bus and said that the 45p tax rate was... Kwasi Kwarteng's idea. It was the Chancellor who decided that, and I don't think that she meant to throw him under the bus, but that is inevitably what has happened.
I've got to say, that's so pathetic as Prime Minister as well.
Right?
Like, if you're the boss, it's all your fault. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, you can have misbehaviour down the line. There may be a few cases where a prime minister's not signed off on every single detail, but I mean, if it's something like a budget, obviously the prime minister's going to know everything that's in that and has to okay everything that's in that before it's announced.
Yeah, exactly. And to quickly answer your question, no, it wasn't because of bad communication. It's because it is seen as by many commentators and economists, bad economics on one hand and immoral on the other. When the boss of Shell, the people who dig the oil out the ground and put it in the air and make the world hotter, has said, you should probably tax us so that people, like, don't go hungry this winter, then I think you're probably on the wrong side of history.
Okay, so I do have a few issues about this Shell quote, actually.
Go on, correct me.
So I think it was either the CEO or the chair of Shell who said it. And he's apparently outgoing, so he's leaving his job soon. So he actually doesn't really have accountability for what he says. He's got a bit of leeway to say some feel-good things. Also, I think in the case of Shell... was it Shell that had... Shell and BP, I mean, actually all companies in general, I was reading, could essentially write off certain amounts of their tax contributions if they're investing in, like, infrastructure in the North Sea or that sort of thing. I don't think Shell have paid a great deal of, like, tax in general on their profits in the UK.
Colour me surprised.
From what I can tell, and if that guy's been in charge, presumably he's been quite happy to enjoy those that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is actually that the windfall tax was instituted by Boris Johnson earlier this year and has already happened to a certain degree. So the only argument really is whether it's extended over a longer period of time. If we're talking just about the UK case, I mean, other countries have their own windfall taxes, and I guess it's possible that the Shell boss was also talking about that as well. But it's not a great deal of money, I don't think, that's being argued over. So that, according to Channel 4, which did a fact check on this.
Oh, lovely.
Basically, so Labour wants to backdate the levy to January and to remove the tax break on companies' investment spending. That's the thing I was telling you about, you know, you can, if you're making investments, you can write off some of the tax. But if what Labour wants to happen happens, it would extend the windfall tax and would bring in £8 billion, according to the party's own estimates. And the government's energy plans, in terms of, you know, the cap and the other things that they're doing, is going to cost £100 billion this year. So it's not massive, you know, what's being argued over. I mean, £8 billion is still some money, but it's not a big money in the context of all the stuff that's happening at the moment.
Yeah, fair. I clearly am spending too much time on Twitter.
Well, all I can make out is that it's kind of more complicated than that. And there was also a really good Tim Harford, who is a writer for the FT and also has a BBC podcast where he looks at stats, did an episode on energy profits recently. And a big part of the problem is that the UK really only mostly has jurisdiction to tax retailers of energy. So the company you get your energy bill from, which I think in my case is like OVO, but it's like, you know, those sorts of companies. And the companies that actually generate the energy, you know, unless we're talking about North Sea Oil or something like that, very often don't have the same jurisdiction in the UK, and therefore the UK, you know, HMRC or, you know, the tax department of the, you know, UK government doesn't necessarily have the scope to tax, you know, the producers of the energy in, on the other side of the world, basically, who are the ones making lots of money in a kind of a constraining supply and are really trying to exploit the shortage in energy that we're seeing. So I think it's a lot more complicated than just saying windfall tax now, which seems to be, you know, a slogan that you see going around Twitter, as you say.
Do you, I hate for us to go into kind of like absolutistness here, but like looking at, because neither of us went to conference, but seeing all of the punditry that came out of there, it was very much talking about the Conservatives getting ready for opposition. Do you think that there's any chance of her turning it around? The latest that she has to have the next general election is December 2024. Yeah. Do you think there's any way of, how much can she improve things between now and then?
So there was a quote that made me laugh from this was by the writer Jordan Tildesley, who writes for The Independent, among other publications, and she described the Tory conference as apprentice losers cafe vibes, which I think very much conveys the broad sense of what journalists were thinking when they were attending Tory conference. I don't think she can turn it around. I think the Tories are going to lose the next general election, and the only question now is the scope of their loss. So I think that I'm like 99%, 95% confident that Liz Truss is not going to be Prime Minister beyond the next general election, which will be, you know, end of 2024, early 2025 at the latest.
Do you think they have any desire to try and claw it back, maybe change out the leader again, maybe go back to Boris Johnson?
I think this whole Boris Johnson stuff is kind of red herring shit, and it's partly just the fact that a lot of journalists do have decent contacts with Boris Johnson's team, and Boris, you know, the Boris Johnson's team actually is often largely composed of kind of media insiders and former journalists and that sort of thing. So, and also it's a good story, right? I mean, you know, the idea of some, it's kind of like those stories that we used to hear. I haven't heard one quite recently, but during the pandemic, there just seemed to be loads of stories about Tony Blair considering a comeback in politics, particularly when Keir Starmer was polling poorly, which he was doing for quite a lot of the early pandemic. I think often there's just not very much to it. It's just that, you know, some people have made a suggestion. You know, maybe a source close to Tony Blair has made the suggestion, or a source close to Boris Johnson has made the suggestion, and it's a bit like you can connect it to some problem that the current leader of the respective parties is having. And, you know, it's a, you know, it's interesting. I always click on those stories, you know, even even though I think they're crap. but I'm always like, the, you know, the thirst for drama that most political observers have, and most people who read about politics have, is really well served by those kind of stories. I mean, it's similar to the, you know, David Miliband, could he come back to British politics, given that his brother Ed failed? Andy Burnham, you know.
Oh, is Andy, when's Killing of the North going to come down south? Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. I mean, Andy Burnham seemingly did not have a very good conference. There was definitely quite a lot of negative commentary about what he was saying. I think partly because Keir Starmer's doing so well at the moment, so...
Yeah, and Andy Burnham kept on trying to talk about stuff that was very much outside of his remit. So he, one of his big drums that he was beating was his support of PR in the Westminster system, which he is not part of. And really, I think it seemed to distract from what was meant to come across as a very coordinated, unified Labour Party and Labour Party conference, which it was in the end, apart from Owen Jones going around looking like a grumpy little squid.
I saw Owen Jones's video about the Tory conference, which was pretty entertaining. I like that those proper Tories that you stereotype in your head, they do exist.
Like, they do exist.
Proper Tories
do
exist. I also like the fact that this one guy came to speak to Owen Jones after a couple of rounds at the pub, was clearly worse for wear as a result of it, and proceeded to embarrass himself and his party. It was kind of, I mean, but actually not even the drunk guy wasn't the most embarrassing party member, so you've got to kind of think about that, I think.
Just to double click on this a second, Jimmy, because Owen Jones annoyed me this conference season. He was just trying his hardest to dunk on Labour, and saying that Labour was now right wing, and he had this long conversation with Jess Phillips, where she was having none of it. I don't think either of them came away from that conversation. It's a video on his channel. Came away from that conversation particularly positively, to be completely
honest. I think
honest.
She came away from it relatively well.
I think that's because we think that the Labour Party right now is actually probably quite a good thing, and Owen Jones wants it to be Corbynism again. And so I think that it said... who you thought came out best from that argument probably says a lot about where you are with your politics, I think, more than who argued it better. I don't think either of them were particularly good.
I think I'm going to have to accept that. And I mean, that is generally true of most political debates, isn't it? Whichever side you agree with, or, you know,
sure,
usually comes across looking better. And if they come across looking worse, it really says that they've done a very terrible job of defending their positions. But
Do you think there's anything to the Owen Jones argument, though? And you can guess what I think. But do you think there's anything to the Owen Jones argument that the Labour Party has seen a lot of people leave as members over the last couple of years? I think it's a couple of 100,000.
So it was at 500,000 under Corbyn. I think that was the top. I think that was the top membership figure. It made it the biggest party in Europe, I think, by membership. Yeah. That was the, at least that was what was claimed. I never did the Googling to check that one way or the other. And yeah, by seemingly by the official accounts that Labour publishes, those numbers have gone down. So I'm sure in that
it's
sense.
It's about 400. It's not nearly as many as Owen Jones said, actually. Apparently, according to the Commons Library, in December 2021, there were 430,000 members.
Right. So I think a big part of Owen Jones' argument in that video, because essentially, as you say, his allegation was like, oh, the Labour Party is not really left-wing anymore. How can you say you're left-wing? I think Jess Phillips is obviously left-wing to anyone who's not fucking bonkers.
Yeah, right?
I mean, maybe, you know, 50 years' time, Jess Phillips will probably be right wing, Owen Jones will be right wing, Jeremy Corbyn will probably be right wing in 50 years' time, depending on, you know, how things have gone. But
I don't know, it's a pendulum, not a a single direction of travel, Jimmy.
In some ways it's a pendulum. I think in some respects the direction can be quite singular. Owen Jones's politics are not that popular. Like, and if anything, I feel he's sufficiently well versed in the history of the left, in this, you know, the hard left or the far left or the left, capital L. you know,
the left,
you know, that kind of faction in Labour politics, which is a big part of Labour politics, the left of the Labour Party. Their politics are not very popular. They don't tend to do very well at elections. Yeah, there's things you can point to explain that, which are not really to do with the popularity of their policies so much as, you know, the fact that the press skews right wing in terms of its outlook and various other things like that. Effectively, he's just butthurt that his faction lost control of the Labour Party, having had control of it for two elections and stuffed it up. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for once in my lifetime, the left of the Labour Party can't claim that they haven't been allowed to have a go, because they have.
They had a couple of goes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he was being a miserable sod about the whole thing. But you know what? If Keir Starmer wins the next election, more of the policies that Owen Jones supports will be enacted. It won't be the full, you know, smorgasbord of left-wing policies that he wants, but it will be some of them. It will be a lot more of them than under the current government or the previous Tory government. So all that's kind of obvious, isn't it? Like,
yeah, but then he doesn't get to do that pouty face.
I do think the facial hair looks good on him. I think it's working for him.
Let's not talk about that. I don't think he's hot, but I wouldn't say no. You know? Maybe. I'll stop talking.
I think he probably, you're probably, you know, practically a far right, you know, nationalist, according to the Owen Jones scale.
100%. So 100%.
I don't think you're going to get a look in, mate, one way or the other.
I don't know. Maybe a hate fuck is on the cards.
In answer to your question before we, you know, the 2 minutes hate of Owen Jones and then planning your sex life. I actually think Owen Jones's books are pretty good, and I do enjoy watching them.
I also think Chavs is a great, great book.
Chavs is a good book. I think This Land, which was about the Corbyn project, I didn't find as engaging, but Chavs is very good. I think Owen Jones's YouTube channel is also very good. Actually, particularly when he's engaging with people he doesn't agree with, I think he's actually pretty good, which makes the Jess Phillips video all the more baffling. But to go back to whether Liz Truss is going to be replaced before the next general election, I actually think the main problem, as was the case with actually Boris Johnson, is finding the replacement. Because in the case of Boris Johnson, you could at least say Johnson is polling really badly. Let's put somebody vaguely sensible in charge. Maybe we can show the British public we're actually in control of some of these problems, like the energy crisis. We can at least instill some level of faith that we're actually doing something, and we can possibly get back to, you know, having a hung parliament. Let's say we can deprive Labour of a full win, and then who knows what will happen at the election beyond that. In this case, it's like, well, they've already changed leader. Admittedly, they've gone from, you know, Boris Johnson's government under the pandemic in many ways was quite big state, you know, because of all the health spending and other spending they had to do. It's sort of by necessity rather than the, you know, Johnson
ideology.
Having an ideology, but that, you know, that's the nature of things. He was quite good at the sort of patriotic bluster and, like, you know, Britain is a great country, yada yada yada, which people do like. You know, obviously, as you say, he was then unseated because of all the bunga bunga parties. The very, very sad British bunga bunga parties that he was having. But at this point, it's like, with who are you going to replace Liz Truss with? You could replace her with Rishi Sunak. That's obviously a name that's come up in discussions.
Do you think he'd want the job now?
So this is my point, is that the Tories are going to lose the next general election, I think, whoever is in charge. I just think that.
And you know what? Can I have a second? That feels great. like, actually, we've only made this podcast under Conservative-led governments.
That's true, yeah. That's
and
true.
I'm sick of it. Like, they've, especially the last, like, 4 or 5 years, they've just careered this country off a cliff, and I just can't wait for somebody else to have a go. So I'm really happy about that. And actually, I think we should take a moment just to let that sink in. The next government is almost definitely not going to be a Conservative government. That's great.
I thought we'd just have a few minutes of, you know, moments of silence to...
I think so.
So that people can...
Just let that permeate through
us. I mean, we probably do have a couple of Tory voters who listen to this podcast. We'd be interested to hear if, you know...
I'd love to... I'd love to hear from you. How do you feel? Let us know.
Well, this was the thing that came up at the conference, is that a lot of, like, Tories... Well, allegedly. This is all, like, the hearsay you get on via British journalists on Twitter, is that there are Tory members and even special advisers, allegedly, who are thinking of voting Labour at the next election, just because they think the current one's terrible. Sorry, current government's terrible. But yeah, I think it would have to be somebody who was willing to take on the mantle of Prime Minister, but then also willing to lose an election, probably quite badly. And their only aim between now and the next general election is to minimise the damage. That is the sort of person that would have to replace Liz Truss, I think.
Speaking of minimising the damage, what were the numbers, the projected numbers on State of the Nation for New Statesman? Has the Conservatives, if there were an election today, at 80 seats?
83 seats, I think it is.
That is unprecedented for the Conservative Party, which is meant to be like an election, like the most efficient election winning machine in the history of all political parties.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. Although I think that maybe just tells you more about the stability of, you know, Britain as a unitary nation than anything else. But yeah, it is true that Tories are arguably the most successful political party of all time, measured by winning elections. So yeah, the current, I mean, depending on what poll you look at, it currently breaks down at around 50% for Labour, between sort of 25% here actually on the New Statesman's current kind of projections, or current model. Lib Dems get 10%. What am I looking at here? Greens get 5%. But, I mean, yeah, the projection they have is 465 Labour MPs, 83 Conservative MPs, 23 Lib Dem MPs, which is actually still up 12 on what they had previously. I mean, that would just be astonishing, wouldn't it? 465 MPs. That's beyond what even New Labour got in the 1997 general election. And even that was a bit indecent, to be honest. Like...
there were people saying that Labour would never be able to get a majority alone. The one thing that does mean is that our dream of some kind of proportionate representation would probably be completely out the fucking window.
Labour discuss PR at their conference?
They did, and it's committed at the party level. The party is committed to PR, but that doesn't have to be what the government does.
Right, okay. I mean, a similar story with New Labour, actually. When Tony Blair came in, he was promising electoral reform, and he did tinker around with the constitution in various ways, a lot of which he's now criticised for. But he never got around to actually, you know, dealing with electoral reform in that big way. So New Labour actually got 418 seats in 97, so it would actually be a bigger... I mean, it would finally show...
I feel like it's very unlikely
I think it is pretty unlikely, to be honest.
The only way is up for the Conservatives right now. That should have been the song that Liz Truss walked out to when she did her speech.
Yeah. This is kind of the 83 MPs thing. There's been a lot of opinion pieces exploring the idea that the Tories could be facing a, quote, extinction-level event at the next general election. At the risk of being overly rude about the Tory party, I do think they have a cockroach-like ability to survive extinction-level events.
I don't think this is the end of the Conservative Party. I don't think they're going to get under 100 seats. They might get under 200, which is equally... appalling.
Well, not equally appalling, but still bad for them.
Well, no, of course not equally appalling, which is still pretty bad. That's where Labour were after 2019, and that was seen as pretty catastrophic for them. I don't think that's going to happen. It would be bloody interesting, though. because then what happens? Do the reform part? Do we get Farage back? What happens?
It's interesting that Nigel Farage has been so quiet lately. Do you not think? Like, he's not piped up. I mean, he actually...
I'm annoyed I mentioned him, to be honest.
He did tweet that he actually really liked Liz Truss's budget.
Of course he fucking did.
Endorsements you don't want to get. I mean, that's like, you know, that's I'm not going to say what I was about to say. It's too rude. But I think there's a bit of me, again, to go back to the, you know, the hunger for drama I have, that really would love to see the Tories get 83 seats, just because I think it would be...
I'd love to see who's left.
Well, there is that. Yeah, there is that. I mean, there's talk of like people with like five-figure majorities who are pretty worried about losing their seats as Tory MPs. So it's definitely, there's a lot of people in the Tory party who are exceedingly rattled by the state of things now. And that's part of the reason why Liz Truss is getting so much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's much more likely that Labour will come in probably with the sort of majority the Tories have, you know, like a solid majority, but nothing as dramatic as 465 MPs. I think we're probably at the height of you know, anti-Liz Truss feeling, and I think that in some ways it sort of feels wrong, though, because the problems that she's failing to address are going to get worse over the winter. But it just seems implausible that Labour would get that many seats. Do you not think? It seems like crazy.
Yeah, it feels completely out of the realm of possibility. I agree. But the election is potentially over 2 years away.
Well, you've got to assume the Tories will... I mean, especially with Liz Truss in power, she's going to cling on as long as possible, isn't she? She's not She's not going to be like... I mean, she's not going to call a general election. We were kind of, before she came in, we were discussing the prospect of a snap election. I think that is well off the table at this point. Mm-hmm.
Well, because she killed the Queen.
Because she killed the Queen. But in some ways, you know, she could do the honourable thing, just be like, well, as Prime Minister, I still have power to call a general election. And that's what I'm going to do. And she could just end it here. Dignified exit for the Tory party. And she's like, we all deserve a spell in opposition.
Dignified?
More dignified. Dignity is relative, I think.
Okay, so fun little question to close. Love also how we've completely ignored the fact that the SNP are having their party conference at the moment. Also, the Lib Dem one didn't happen because of the Queen.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to be the next leader of the Conservative Party? I'll go first. Kemi Badenoch.
That was where I was leaning, actually.
Especially if they go down to 83 MPs.
If they go down even to like 120 MPs or 150 MPs, I think the thing is, if things persist in the way they are doing so in the polls, I think the next leader of the Tory party will not be the Prime Minister who follows Keir Starmer, if that makes sense. I think you're mm-hmm. very possibly looking at a
decade out of power again.
Well, I mean, that's what we were saying about Labour when Boris Johnson came in with his 80 seat majority, and this is where we are now. So, you know, you could definitely overstate your confidence about things. But yeah, I think if they the way things are looking now, yeah, they're going to potentially have like sort of the new Labour years for the Tories, where you had William Hague came in, and then Ian Duncan Smith, and then Michael Howard, and it was just when Tory activists, like those who are around there, talk about what it was like then. I mean, actually, George Osborne's an interesting guy in this respect, because he was in he was working around the Tory party during that period. It just sounds really, really shit. Just really demoralizing. You're just getting totally walked over by the government. Kind of as Labour have experienced for much of the past 12 years. Which actually, in some ways, maybe that makes it more likely that Kemi Badenoch will be elected as the next leader, because she seems eager for the job, and I don't think she'd be the sort of person who would be like, well, I'm just going to bide my time for another 5 years and pick it up when the next person fails. So,
yeah, and I think that person is Rishi Sunak.
You think he's going to
bide his time? Yeah,
bide his time. I mean, he's young for a politician, isn't he? So,
yeah, and very rich. He doesn't need to do anything.
Yeah, well, everyone was joking that he was going to piss off to Silicon Valley after this. You think he's here
for
the duration?
Prime Minister. Yeah, he wants to be Prime Minister.
Okay, big prediction from Jazza here.
Another one.
Just keep throwing them out there. One of them will prove true, and then you can claim credit for that.
Hey, I got the Brexit one right. That is all that matters.
Very good. All right, shall we wrap things up there?
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
I'm Jazza John. That's Jimmy. Bye. We're so good at this.